Blog Talk Radio.
Glowing red in a bed of coals, the poet is born. Our story is riddled with challenges and changes, like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled into shape. If only forging a poet were that easy. Emotional development, relationships, experiences, environment, and genetics all take a hand in molding the people we are today. Welcome to Double Helix, where we examine the X's and the Y's on a show celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what ties the room together. Get comfortable, because what you're about to hear is the poetry that we are made of. This is Double Helix on Late Night Poets Blog Talk Radio. We are a group on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can chat with us in the chat and read the poems as we do. I'm Aphasiana. My co-host, Dan Deschino, is here, as well as Pam Ray and Robbie's Poetry. How are you doing, Dan?
How you doing? Hey, Phasey, how you doing there? What a rough day, huh?
Yeah, it's been a rough month in general, but today I'm a little feverish and the mucus monster. So I'm probably not going to be as talkative tonight, as you can hear in my voice, but we have you and Pam and Robbie, so I still think it's going to be great.
Oh, it's going to be great, yeah. I actually ate, my wife made homemade hummus with ridiculous amounts of garlic, which I figured out is a blood thinner, and then I just drank a whole bunch of wine. So I'm going to be very interesting tonight as well, too. but we have Robbie and Pam here as well. So yeah, you might hear some unmuting drums playing by mistake at one point. But we do have Robbie and Pam as well too. So the host and co-host might be a little off, but we got the guests to make up for it.
Welcome, so. Pam.
Good to be Welcome. Here. I'm looking forward to the show. You know, obviously got a great amount of poetry, and you know what? I hope you feel better soon, Faizy. And it's always great to hang out with you and Dan, no matter how, no matter what, whether there's drums playing in the background or people have raspy voices. I just know it's going to be a great show.
Thank you. And how are you doing, Robbie?
I'm doing pretty good. Today was actually a good day, and I finished putting together a gift bag for a charity, and the charity is where you fill a gift bag. Something like the suggested range was 40 to 150 for a kid in need, and the kid that I got, he's going to be spoiled rotten, and I love that. I'm looking at it now. He's going to have a 900-piece Lego set. So I mean, if that doesn't make a kid's Christmas, I don't know what will.
Well, that makes a kid's Christmas, and that makes a kid's Christmas, and that's a parent's nightmare because they're the ones that have to actually put it together.
To get the appropriate age range.
I'm probably the oldest one here, but I remember when you just got a box of Legos and you had to like make stuff yourself, and now it's just a bunch of directions, which is fine. I got a bunch for my kid, and I remember getting the two biggest ones where we got a TIE fighter that, I'm not joking, my hands were like cramped like claws afterwards. Like literally they were hurting it was like 9 hours to put this thing together. And then we got Saruman's Tower, which my son still has. He's 21 years old now. He still has in his room that we made that took like days to make. Those are the biggest ones, but they are still fun to.
I had that in mind. I very much had it intended. It's a party set, and so it has suggestions, but all the pieces are very general ones. And like, there's some specific ones like flames, like candle flames and that, but most of the pieces are very general, and I really wanted to get him a big set with more general pieces so that he could just do what he wanted. And so with that set, I know he'll be able to, you know, create his own things. And actually that is something I had in mind, because I don't like that about Lego now. Sometimes it's harder to get those general sets where you can just make your own thing. The kids' imagination is getting too directed. It's not even imagination. And it's like, well, you know, it's nice to be able to put together a tire fire if you want, but it should be easier to get those more blank sort of sets like you were saying, that I got, where, you know, you have a lot of just general pieces and you just put together your own thing.
I hope you feel better in
Louisiana there. I feel for you. I really do feel for you because, and like I was saying in chat, only a few days ago, it was probably like a sinus thing, but I was going through my own my own unpleasantness. And so hope you get better soon. I'm glad that I recovered in time for this show, because then otherwise we'd be down by two, right?
Yeah. Oh, glad you're here. All right, one question before we get started, totally off topic. The kid, besides the Legos, kids still play with Lincoln Logs. Anybody know what Lincoln Logs are? That's still a thing? Nobody knows what that is, right? Is that way before everyone's time?
Yeah, when I was a kid, we always had Lincoln Logs, but I haven't seen them around. Of course, my kids are all older now, so, but I don't even remember them playing with them when they were younger. It was a...
Busy, you're around kids all the time, the Lincoln Logs?
There's Kiva planks, which are basically like little pieces of wood, but really popular too. So I think that's probably like the closest thing that I can think of. You just build stuff out of these planks of wood. So that's more of a free play imagination thing, which I'm surprised blew up the way that it did. Not so much as a couple of years ago, but we have them at work in the little play corner, and people build all kinds of things out of them. So that's the closest thing that I can picture that is probably like Lincoln Logs, although I never had those myself.
Oh, all right. Well, that's fun. Anyway, I'd love to talk about Legos all night, but I have a feeling we have some poetry tonight, too.
We do. That's why we're here. So we're continuing from last show, which was 2 weeks ago, the Epilepsy Awareness Month. If you missed last show, it was fantastic, I think. I'm a little biased, but we had some really good poems and some really good conversations as three of us have epilepsy, and then Dan was our wonderful questioner, which, you know, I think it's great to have someone from the outside who's asking questions because, you know, listeners who are not epileptic themselves can have their questions answered through Dan. So I think that's great. I'm hoping I didn't overlap at all. I tried to go through what we'd done and change it. So if you look at what I'm posting and you're like, we did that last show, let me know. I don't think that I'm duplicating, but I'm not my full self today. So we're going to start with one by Cedar Chapman. And Dan, would you please read that one for us?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. All right, Cedar. This is called, Am I Wired Differently? Before he can answer my question, the beast flaunts his aura and dissolves a hollow pit in the center of my xiphoid process, as if I were free-falling in a roller coaster without safety bars, tin and copper camp on my tongue, lathering my taste buds as I pucker my lips from the sour juices of a leaky 40-volt lead acid battery. Both positive and negative terminals play footsies with my gray matter. Is my face twitching and sagging like a wax statue in the desert sun? The poor fellow sitting across from me is still watching the football game, slowly sipping his Guinness. I wonder what he'll think. No, not the Grand Mal, which I know it is now, sorry. Just don't piss on myself. This rock teetering over a precipice, heavy for all to bear. Sometimes it falls on my head, and I wake up with a huge migraine, bare naked, with all eyes staring upon me. End poem.
I really like how this poem uses spacing. So there's really big space during this section that says, just don't, big blank, like couple blank lines, piss, a few blank lines, on, bunch of blank lines, myself, blank, 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 before the last stanza. And I really like that because there are those blanks where you lose a little bit of time, where there's confusion, where in your mind everything starts to go slow motion. So I think that the spacing there is very relevant to the topic. And helps pass that along. And it's hard to show that verbally, although Dan did pause nicely. But it, I just wanted to point out that on the paper, there are big spaces, and by paper I mean screen, and you can tell that was intentional. I really like that it has the grittiness of worrying about the piss, because it's true. You do pee yourself when you have a seizure sometimes, and that can be a really awkward, embarrassing thing if you're in public. And you know, it's hard because like it's not like it's your fault. So it's any kind of sickness thing should not, in theory, be embarrassing, but it is. As someone who's done it, it's a very embarrassing thing. And there's that panic when you're about to be sick. It's horrible that like your worry in that moment, what it should be about like your safety is like, oh, they're gonna see me pee. Oh no, trying so hard not to do something that will be what they'll think. So like this, he's worrying, like he's wondering about his twitching, sagging face. And, you know, that's a very alarming thing to feel and to know about yourself that that's happening. But he's referring to the person across from him as poor fellow, as if, like, being the bystander, oh, feeling bad for him, wonder what he'll be thinking, worrying about the other people instead of himself. I mean, Cedar seems a lot nicer than I am. He's so worried about the other people. This is very visceral, too, with the copper paste and the I like the way he describes the juices of a leaky 40-volt lead-acid battery playing footsies with my gray matter. So the idea of, like, the battery going bad and that the brain not working, yes, that feels like a great way of describing it. It's cute that it's playing footsies with the gray matter. That's a fun way of saying it. But also, pucker my lips from the sour juice of that. So there is this really horrible taste that I only ever get when I'm in the midst of a seizure or about to have one. And that is such a good way of describing it, that battery acid. And the copper, which is like a blood kind of thing, but like that, it's more than that. So to think of it as the battery acid really works well, I think. And that's not something that, like, when people see a seizure, they're like, oh, that must taste gross. You don't think about that unless you've experienced it. So I really like that was included there. And then waking up with a migraine, yes, but bare naked with all eyes staring upon me. Is he talking about literally naked, where maybe he disassociated and went through something? Or is it just that feeling of nakedness? You're vulnerable. They've seen you at your moment where you have no control over your body, where you are just completely vulnerable, and that can make you feel naked. So I'm leaning in that direction, but, you know, it could also be literally. That one of my favorite spoken word poets is Neil Hilborn, and he has one where he's like, "You're woken up on the hood of a car, naked, like a plush chicken." And that's like the beginning of his poem, and then he goes on this big rant about his mental illness. But there's something about the, "I've never woken up on a car, naked like a chicken." No, but thankfully no. I thought this was great, Cedar. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I was really impressed with this one. I thought it had this amazing imagery and powerful emotive lines on the questions and struggles within the mind and the heart of many epileptics. And while I have never woken up naked after a seizure, thankfully, I can see where it would be a fear, but I also see how that would work metaphorically. I did like where he brings in the taste of copper on the tongue. And even when he says, before he can answer my question, the beast flaunts his aura. Because, you know, I know that the aura that comes just before you have a seizure is very common to many epileptics. And I like that he refers to the seizure as the beast, you know, as this monster inside you that comes forth. You know, the whole idea of being, I like that he touches on the idea of being embarrassed in public. Even though, as you said, we technically shouldn't be because it's an illness, still, you can't help yourself. You just, you know, it's this automatic response. I remember way back in high school, I had a grand mal seizure, and when I came out of it, they were trying to get me into a wheelchair. Like, I was waking up, and they were trying to get me into a wheelchair, and I kept trying to kick the wheelchair away because I wasn't crippled. I didn't want to be in a wheelchair, but I couldn't even hardly stand. But that's like one of those examples of those moments of pride where you're like, no, I can do this. And it's like, but, you know, so I get it. And, you know, I just think whether Cedar actually has epilepsy himself or he knows somebody who does or he just simply did his research, he has done a phenomenal job of getting into that mindset and what it's like to go into a seizure in public. So very well done.
I agree. There was this one time where my coworkers were trying to get me, like, out of the public area and into, like, this private staff room. And we didn't have a wheelchair. So they put me on one of, like, the rolly chairs, like the comfortable desk chairs. So they're just, like, pushing the desk chair, and I'm, like, flopped over.
Oh,
trying to get me into the elevator on the... Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God.
Of course, that same day. So they roll me downstairs. They put me in the staff area, and they give me my medicine, which is Ativan. And Ativan gets you quite high, too. So once I had my Ativan and I was feeling better physically, I decided it would be fun to ride the book carts. People got a fun show. Robbie, what did you think of the poem?
Well, I was thinking about, and I kind of wonder how what everybody else's experience is like this. It's like, it kind of reminded me of how, well, you know, he says, well, oh boy, I hope I don't piss myself. And this whole thing of like being more worried about what the other person is going to perceive as opposed to what's happening to you. And like for me, like I know that you, when it's a part of your life, you get used to it. It doesn't become mundane quite, but it does get to a point where you're just like, oh, it's happening again. It's not like, oh my God, this horrible thing's happening to my body and mind. And you just, you don't think of it that way. You don't think of it in those kind of terms, but because other people aren't used to it, you know, they're like, oh my God, what's happening? And, that's the thing is because you're more used to it, I think we tend to forget, or we can forget how much of an impact it has on other people. And I think maybe that's part of the reason why you're like, oh, well, I hope he doesn't see this or that. You're not thinking about, because, you know, you're like, you're thinking to yourself right in the, well, you know, it's happened before. I'll be okay. You know, this is, it still suck, but I'll be okay. And that's the thing, like, I know for myself, like, when I've had the, what feels like nightmares occurring during mini-seizures because of the frenzy of it all, and, you know, and I wake up a little, feeling a little off, like, body-wise, like, stiff in that, so it feels like a concurrent sort of thing, and I just, like, I'll casually mention something, and I'll forget what it actually sounds like, and it's like, oh, yeah, I had this nightmare yesterday, and it felt like my mind was going through glass or something. Like, oh my God, Rob, I hope you're okay. And then I realize, oh crap, that's right. It sounds horrible, doesn't it? But you're just so used to it that you sometimes you relay the experience and you forget how terrible it actually sounds to them. Or when it's about to happen to you, it's why you're able to focus more on, oh, what's this going to look like to the other person? Because it's an experience you've had a lot of times before, right? So
I think that makes sense. Yeah. The difference for me is I also had sort of a stroke once, and that was a lot more serious. So usually my panic is I'm trying to decide, is this a seizure or a stroke? It's really hard to say.
Yeah, other than that, like you say, everybody's case is different. I know, like, for me, a lot of the focus is when I'm going to sleep, like, you know, am I going to have a peaceful night's rest and that? And that doesn't happen as much anymore. But when I'm outside and all that, there's all that, like, in the winter I'm more on the alert because there's all that blasted, hateful, you can tell I don't like it, that glaring light off the snow. And that stuff can really make me dissociate. Like, I have the sunglasses now, but especially in the winter, there's always that little tick in the back of my mind, like, ugh, I better not forget my sunglasses, and, you know, I hope this, when I go out there, and it's like there's a bright sun glaring off the ice and the snow, have that kind of hateful feeling, you know, like you hear that hateful tone here of like the hatefulness towards the condition, right? And so it reminded me actually of that as well, that you had that adversarial, you're used to the condition, but at the same time you do have an adversarial feeling to it, like you're not as much worried about what's going to happen to you, mostly because you've been through it, but at the same time you have a hateful tone in your mind, like, oh great, it's happening again, you know, and you have like this hostile feeling towards like your own mind, like, why you gotta be messing up, mind, why you gotta be fucking up, you know, that sort of thing. And the description physically is like, I agree, there is very visceral, is very interesting. Like, I think it's appropriate for to have an electrical sort of description like it does here. I haven't had that bitter taste on my mouth myself. I think it's more because I slip into full seizures while I'm already asleep. So it's not like I like falling right into a full seizure like that, right from a waking state. But I think of like the horrible taste that you have in your tongue when you, like, say, like if you've been running like in the cold, you know, and those I can't remember, some sort of acid builds up in your tongue, like all the waste fatigue chemicals and all that. And I'm thinking that this must be like that times 1,000, right? So I can just imagine what that would taste like.
It's pretty gross. It really is. Dan, what do you think?
Well, I have pissed on myself and woke up bare naked with all eyes staring upon me, but that had nothing to do with epilepsy. That was just college, so, you know, let's just leave that alone. But... I'm joking. If my son's listening, I'm joking because he's in college right now. But
Dad, tell me that story. I want to know.
Yeah, no, I don't want to know.
Tell me, Dad.
I don't want to know. Just like I didn't tell my parents. I did like Fazy. I did like how that just don't piss on myself kind of spread out down. You know, you can feel the reader, like, just time being lost, you know. And again, I can't really speak from an epileptic, you know. I thank God, I feel bad for what you guys have to go through. You know, I'm happy I don't have anything like that. But I can, I've been sick and I've seen people, and time itself can disappear. It can feel weird. You don't know what's going on in the world. You know, and I've been sick or hurt, whatever, enough where that kind of even happens, or just been dazed or whatever, and you don't know what's happening. So you can kind of feel his mind disappearing, like taking over, and he's like losing consciousness, or time itself is disappearing, which I thought is interesting. I also liked all about the taste buds and the taste and all of that, because I don't know if anybody here has done acupuncture, but I very much recommend it. You know, can't cure a thing. It's not going to cure epilepsy. It's not going to, cure stuff. Although I have actually seen people where it did cure. In fact, I let me take that back. It actually cured me of my, or it healed me, helped me heal from my, I had carpal tunnel at one point. It actually healed my sister's TMJ, if you know what that is. But it really helps with almost anything. It can basically help your body heal and calm down. And the reason I'm bringing that up is when I used to go to the acupuncture, she would do two things. She would take my pulse and she would look in my mouth. That's all she would do. And she could tell every single time exactly what was going on with me, stress, cold, anything. And it's amazing how much the mouth is almost a written prescription for what's going on in the world. And I don't think we for what's going on, in inside of you. And I almost think that we don't read the signs that much. So to me, what was interesting was I didn't realize with, you know, to me it sounded like a heart attack or something this person was having, or a seizure, or their heart was failing, because that's I hear that that's what happened. You start getting that, you know, metallic taste in your mouth. I didn't realize that happened with epileptics, with seizures or, you know, strokes. You know, I think it does. But the mouth is just a very interesting place because it really can, you can tell what's kind of happening in there. And I think we should all pay more attention if you're, you know, if you taste something or something's weird. My father, in his last, you know, few months, his kidneys failed tremendously. And one of his symptoms was nothing tasted right because of the kidneys. And I didn't realize that either, but that it just the poison in your body from the kidneys just affects the taste buds and it affects your mouth so that things aren't tasting right. And I didn't realize how much of a symptom that is either. So I thought that was interesting, something I didn't know. But this is a great poem, and it really kind of, I think, took the reader on a journey. You could feel the pain and the anguish and the, you know, the unfortunate, like you were saying, Faith, the humiliation, which you shouldn't feel. You should feel more worried about yourself, but you could kind of just really feel what the reader was going through. So I thought it was great. Awesome job. All right. And with that said, let's move on, since we're a half hour in the show and we've done one poem, which is a sign of a good conversation, but we should probably move on.
Our next poem is by Naomi Sarah. And Pam, would you read that one for us, please?
I would be happy to. In Twisted Tangles by Naomi Sarah. Brain stammers electrified, sucked into black holes that twirl, where time withers into space, whirling in flashes of colors unknown, sliding in celestial chaotic crashes as neurons spark and synapses ignite. In twisted turns and tangles where stars are shining, guiding beacons, leading the way through an infinite night, where dreams burst forth in vivid sight, ephemeral visions swift and bright, unrestrained by the shackles of earthly norms, searching for an undiscovered planet, a peaceful sanctuary, a safe harbor for a mind that craves acceptance to exist. End poem.
Excellent read, Pam. That was great. And this one's really interesting, so I am going to ask a question, and when you guys comment, you can answer my question. So this one, I think, is different than any of the ones we've read before, where it is describing how the brain is kind of moving, you know, kind of misfiring. Well, this is more of like a euphoric. My mother had diabetes. She actually, I'll give her flowers to soul, Mom, if you're listening. She was actually one of the longest lived people ever in history with diabetes. She lived 80 years with type 1 diabetes without an amputee. She actually held a record. I don't know if the records still hold, but she got I don't say awards, but she got there. So she had it for a long time, but I've seen her in diabetic comas, and she would tell me she would hallucinate. You know, she almost seemed like she was stoned or something. There was something wrong with her, but that it almost reminded me of this. Maybe I'm reading it wrong, but it seemed a little bit euphoric or a trippy almost. And I'm wondering if that can happen with this, where the twist turns and tangles, so the neurons and the sparks synapses ignite. But now the stars are shining, guiding beacons, leading way through the infinite night, where dreams burst forth in vivid sight. So it's almost seeming like you're, like I said, almost taking you someplace, like dreamlike. So I thought that was really interesting, a different take on, you know, where the brain, you know, when it misfires, can take you. So I thought that was a really interesting take and way to put it from Naomi, and beautifully written as always from her. She's amazing. Gentlemen first, let's start with Robbie.
Well, I don't know if I'm a gentleman sometimes, but I'll take that. I was going to put in a comment just now with this one. I thought it very directly captured the actual physical process in the brain. A lot of the poems here have been talking about the external process, and it's like something it'll mention about the internal process sometimes, but it'll be like a quarter or half of the poem or like it'll be scattered kind of throughout, and then the rest of it is the physical process, like what's happening to the outside world, and you know what people are perceiving, and what you get, and what you're worried about is externalizing in the outside world. But with this, it's very much focused on the actual process in the brain, and it kind of has like this. It kind of captures to me a contradiction where, you know, like things are like, it's like things are tightening in the brain because your signals are going 10,000 fold. Like the first time I read that statistic, I was like, oh my God, I didn't know it was that much more. But now, and then I was like, that really explains things. But yeah, there's the contradiction of there's that, but then there's a certain spaciousness because you're dissociating or you just become unconscious and that in the brain to me, like if you were describing dissociation or losing consciousness in the brain, you would describe that process in a spacious way. And like, you know, you have like the kind of a tight feeling, whirling and flashes neurons spark and synapses ignite. But then, you know, you have a more spacious sort of feeling where stars are shining, guiding beacons, leading the way through an infinite night and everything. So I like that tension that's in here when it's describing the process inside the brain of a seizure. But yeah, it's showing both the spacious, trippy elements and like the more tight elements, like with the, you know, the overstimulation and the synapses going crazy.
Excellent comment, Robbie. Yeah, you're correct. It is very much inside the brain, which we did actually show a lot more of the, which makes sense. I don't know if Naomi has epilepsy or knows about it, but I would think that, you know, people who do have either maybe they are more conscious of what's happening around them, right? Whereas opposed to, you know, Naomi's describing what's inside, which is a very interesting comment. Thank you, Basie. How you doing over there?
Okay. This is not my experience, in that this does sound like a beautiful, wonderful kind of journey. Not how it has felt for me, although I'm jealous of that. This is maybe after I've taken my Ativan. So it's I've always assumed that was the high of the medicine, but you know, maybe part of it is just your brain recovering. The part that I do relate to here is the whirling flashes of colors, and the way that it describes how the colors are all kind of like swirling and twirling, and the electrified aspect of it. I do like that it's written in terms of electricity with sparks and ignite, there's kind of connections to the electrical impulses in the brain, and that's one thing that I definitely feel a connection to, is like, because I always think of the nerve pain that I get as blue lightning. I don't know why blue, but I always imagine that this shock that goes through me, in my mind, that is blue. The whatever the hell light is going through me, that is the pain and the nerves being funky. It's blue in my imagination always. And so when it's talking about like the flashes of color and the chaotic crashes of that, I feel like that's how I would connect to this. So I like her word choices, and I love that it has that kind of ending where of like seeking a safe harbor. This sounds like such a more positive take on it that I hope this is true for some people, because it's not what I feel, but it would be wonderful if that's how people experience it. That would be.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Rob.
I was gonna say, yeah, I think maybe blue is like kind of the color you do see, though, and maybe that's why you associate, like, just in terms of like. Like one time, unfortunately, someone boxed my ears, and not a pleasant experience. And like I saw, like, my eyes were closed. Like, well, I guess they automatically closed. And like, I saw, like, blue sparks, you know, behind my eyes. And it just seems that it does happen in physically, it seems to happen that, like, when something kind of odd is going on in your brain, or it's in, like, an extreme, kind of like, if I would imagine, maybe if you had if you got a concussion, all this, and it does seem to be blue that kind of sparks behind your eyes or in front of your eyes when, like when you have, like, that, like, something odd mentally going on, you know, neurologically, or if you get, like, all of a sudden, like, a very severe, like, physical impact. It's just, I don't know, from what I recall and from what I seem to hear from other people, it does seem that it's blue that shows up like that. So it kind of makes sense to me that it would be blue in the imagining as well.
Interesting. Blue Lightning, that's a great name for a band, an album, or maybe a whiskey. You can name anything Blue Lightning. That's a great name.
That was my joking stripper name when I used to attempt to dress more sexy. I had these tights that had Blue Lightning on it.
Your name was Blue Lightning?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. All right, well, I'll look for that that YouTube video somewhere, Daisy. All right, cool. And Pam, you're back. What do you think?
Yes. I really like how she describes to me the way the mind can kind of go all over the place and you lose control of it. I especially like where in the first line she says, brain stammers, electrified. I thought the brain stammer was like a great way to describe, you know, the idea of going into the seizure. I also liked where she said at the end, a peaceful sanctuary, a safe harbor for a mind that craves acceptance to exist. Because, you know, I mean, we're all, especially those of us who have those invisible illnesses, you know, we're always looking for craving acceptance and understanding and wanting to find that peaceful sanctuary. And, you know, I think she just really does a great job with, as you guys were talking about, the electricity, you know, and the disorganization of the brain, you know, especially another lines that were great, where in twisted turns and tangles. I mean, to me, it just really a thoughtful write on the just way that the energy within you just gets totally messed up. So wonderful write and very well done.
Yeah, thanks, Pam. Great comment. Hi, Faizy. What do you want to do?
I'm going to read one of mine. I know I read another one last time, so hopefully this isn't the same one. I don't think so. Neurological Spiders by Faiziana. My spine seizes, a darkness drapes, trickling down each vertebrae until pelvic bone aches. Tingles like a thousand spiders run from ear to jaw on repeat, sometimes jumping down my cleavage, climbing back to wrap my tongue in webs. The web tastes like metal and baby powder, remnants of anesthetic mismanaged. My eyes swim like floaters that dance, like bees trying to communicate, their interpreter drunk on mead. The white-hot stings of the spiders running in from the left temple are less worrisome than the alternative. Sometimes a dark film weighs down, pressing the face from right temple on, that foreshadows hours of deep pain, convulsions jarring all organs on repeat. If you're always dizzy, how do you know when you need help? It's like asking, if your eyes often water, how do you know when they explode in a pool of blood, leaving you blind? The electric shock in my head makes me wonder if I am in fact a cyborg. Who programmed me to feel this pain? Motherfucker Frankenstein. End poem.
Excellent read, Faizy. That was fun, and you know, yeah, it's I like you guys have like a you know, it's what I always think is, first of all, strength is what I've seen in a lot of these is a little bit of humor, but like angry humor, which I think is really, you know, is acceptance, right? Everybody in the poetry and all of you guys seem to be not, you know, sympathetic with yourselves. You guys know that this is what this is, and you accept it, and you don't embrace it. You kind of make fun of it or deal with it, right? So I think that was interesting. But I really like the neurological spiders. What an amazing, I mean, that just that title alone, that's such a great title. That could be a whole prompt right there, just neurological spiders. Because, you know, the brain itself, right, it kind of almost looks like that. Everybody's seen pictures of the brain and the, active brain. It looks like spiders. And it is almost interesting that the tinglings that you can get from different things. My wife just today actually was sitting there, and she's been every once in a while she has these bites. She calls it, I don't even know exactly what she's talking about. She says she feels these vibrations in her, and today she described it as like ants running around inside of her, which I thought was interesting. So, you know, it can like small tingles on you can almost feel like bugs. You know, what's that? I think it was a Simpsons joke when they were there was like a mental hospital and it was, you know, whatever it was, Johnson, Springfield Mental Hospital, because there might not be bugs crawling on you. So I thought that was because it can kind of feel like that. If you're, what is your brain? It's just a connection of all the nerves. And if your nerves are kind of tingling weirdly, right, it can feel like that. So the metaphor of the spiders is really amazing. And the white hot stings of the spider running from left temple. So you can kind of almost feel this thing like biting you, right? Remnants of anesthesiatic mismanaged, I thought was an amazing line. But then my eyes swim with the floaters that dance. So that's interesting. You guys haven't talked, I think you've talked a little bit about what you kind of see there. But, you know, we've all had those floaters. The only thing I've come close to, I've been dizzy and I've come close to, you know, whatever, passing out a little bit when I've been sick. And I used to do karate and box a lot when I was younger, and I got almost knocked out once by what I was fighting. This guy was way, way above my league, and I saw like stars, you know, so it was the closest I came at. But, you know, I can imagine just standing there and that happens to you, right? Your eyes swim with the floaters that dance. So I thought that was really interesting line as well, too. So it's great, great aphysiana as always. I don't read enough of your poetry, and I really need to. Pam, let's go to you.
I really liked this one. I had a crack up at that ending. That was great, dark humor. But I too really thought the neurological spires, first of all, was a great title and made for a great metaphor. I especially like where you said, tingles like a thousand spires run from my ear to jaw and repeat. And the web tastes like metal and baby power, remnants of anesthetic mismanaged. My eyes swim with floaters that dance like bees trying to communicate their interpreter drunk on mead. And that was great. I love that you threw the mead in there. You really do have to have, or you should at least, I highly recommend when you're dealing with epilepsy or seizure disorder, you know, you do have to have to a certain extent a sense of humor. When you got like really sarcastic with the second to last stanza and the last one, I thought, oh, that is great. That is just the kind of attitude that many of us just sometimes want to have, the kind of things we just want to say. You know, if you are always dizzy, how do you know when you need help is like asking. If your eyes often water, how do you know when they explode into a pool of blood, leaving you blind? Really awesome lines here. Hard-hitting, clever, and definitely excellent dark humor. So very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Robbie.
Well, I love the ending, too. It's just that real FU to epilepsy, which I think is perfect. We all feel that. And you can tell when you know that there's a personal experience or you relate to something on such a visceral level in a poem, because when it mentions the jaw, like, I was muted, but I literally went, because that's what's happened to me. And, like, where, and it just, something, some very particular things that happen to you are things, I think, that, like, every epileptic has, like, probably one or two things that they find particularly more than bothersome, that they just hate. And for me, it's been when, like, I've had nightmare sessions, and then I said, oh, well, I had the nightmares. Okay, well, it was just nightmares. And then for some reason, it's later on in the day, it's usually the right side. Well, yeah, it's the right side, because there's something weird about my right side. I don't know what it is. That's a whole other story. I have, like, a twitch on my right side, or if I get nervous, it manifests on my right side. And, yeah, like, I'll later on in the day, I'll feel that clench, that tension in the jaw, and it's a really unpleasant, it's not a normal clench or soreness. It's like, it almost feels like close to a nerve thing, right? And you can tell that you super clenched your jaw, and I say to myself, oh, so I probably had a small seizure while I was nightmaring. And so in that regard, it reminded me of how probably every epileptic has one or two particular things that just really tick them off. And with the spiders, it's also appropriate in that, to me, I think of how people react to spiders. Most people, ironically enough, I find spiders fascinating and they don't bother me, but most people, you know, detest them. And when they think of spiders, I just think of them like kind of curling up their body, right, and just kind of shaking, going, you know. And it just, that image alone matches so well with, like, you know, when things are misfiring and you have the prickly feelings and all that. Like, I had the prickly feeling in my extensions, in my extremities, in my fingertips, because I think my meds were lowering my magnesium too much. And it was like, once it took the magnesium, then that had gotten rid of that. But, with the whole, just this, the way the whole thing here is the whole poem, it has just that feeling, I think, of it shows well, kind of like the general agitation of the body in regards to, like, the neurological misfirings and that. And I have to mention that if your eyes often water, how do you know when they explode into a pool of blood, leaving you blind? I have never heard a line like that before, and I think I never will hear that again. That is such a singular line. I love it. It's one of those, you hear something like that, and you say to yourself, there's no way I'm ever going to come up with anything even resembling that feel that was captured in that line. So I love that line. That is going to stick in my head for sure. and like with the cyborg thing, that was just one last thing. I just thought of Terminator for a half second, and I thought of him with his skin, like, off, you know, like when his skin is torn off and revealed, and just kind of like how he's in a messed up state, like he's not supposed to be, because he's half of his disguise is off and half of it is on. So that just kind of popped into my head for half a second when I saw a cyborg.
Excellent, Robbie. Excellent.
I think about that image a lot, because I have half of my skull is metal plated, and I'm like, I wonder if I look like him.
No.
Just get somebody and find out what happens, right? Damn, that's a powerful headbutt. Well, half my skull is metal.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that.
All right, cool.
I'm going to get you to read next, Robbie, if you'll read the one by Ben Hart, please.
Okay. I'll just get to that. Down in the fourth round. Round one. Dizziness. I dream of my teeth shattering, bedroom doors clattering, and another lover fading into streetlights bleak because I kicked them from these sheets without warning. And I have been dying here in a diamond dizzy, seizing in my sleep, a prayer of the flesh to kill me before the morning, before the demon gets to lick its lips and wet its teeth. I still keep my toy soldiers in their matchbox coffins and lie to them as I pretend to know what love is, the architect of their defeat, in the batteries over Boston where they now get to rest and I get to play with rubble, the dust of failed eternities. I still write myself eulogies, the words I wish I had heard when welcomed back from another haunting of lonely, when Mama still chose my dreams from between the dancers in a night sky, a darkness she left me alone in. Someone who still haunts the body that they should have fled when they got in, when time still wanted something more from them than just its dust black, than dust its dust back. Round two, maelstrom of memories. I forget where we left the dead, somewhere along all those places in a day. Did we bury them in the skin? Because I remember touch and how it returned numb to its senses, but not to the love, nor the moment the name was forgotten. Round three, identity purge. A bird of water paints halos to sandily sanctify its prey, the fallen alpinist that makes its halfway to a heaven he wouldn't have believed in, because like the scavenger, he is only chasing traces of himself. Round four, defying destiny. How ironic that the way to heaven lies in a memory, and if I die tomorrow, a good man yet? I bet I know mine. The second time I fell in love with you, and how fitting it would be that it was a moment of silence, a moment of music, a moment of flight, when poets found the score to their lives and the right muse to direct the orchestras of light through the blind of time. And oh, how it would heal me to die there in your arms, to fade from your eyes for a change. Have a shot at peace before coming home to Peter to deny three times that I love Jesus just to see the look on his face. I hope he still lets me in. Bonus round. Daisy's in a fugue state. She likes Ren better. Sicari's kiss, the work of nightshade angels who thought they him had tricked when he himself wrote to these pages of history, but they say the gypsies killed God. And who's missed him? We've got everything we need, every huntsman a victim, every liberty's a system, every poor person a businessman. But no business being rich, I guess, because wealth, that needs to be kept consistent. And yeah, there's a nice dream, but you can't have your life and expect to live it, right? When hope is a sin, faith is persistence, and safety a bargaining chip? God's plan died with him, and man's plan for humanity had always been built on slavery, and the chains may have been replaced. We're still slaves, puppets to the grave. We're getting manipulated, besieged from digital peripheries. But we've got everything we need. Every leper has a remedy. Every poet has the freedom to speak. Every woman has the freedom to leave, but not the freedom to leave a legacy, it seems, because immortality is supposed to remain a man's victory. And yeah, you give life to our excitement, but history, eternity, divinity, please. Can't you see you're meant to serve your whole life on this earth, loved only like the farmer loves his dirt? Chivalry may have died when the second wife Henry had murdered, but it seems woman became a modern man's burden because we're even screaming about what the fucking word means as they are going to war against Venus. misdirected through our screen so perfectly, we shrug off that Masha Arimi died for freedom. And there is another Nanjing happening in the DRC dogma's shadow falling over Afghanistan. If you need anything closer to home, ask any of your friends. They'll have a story about a bad man. But we have everything we need, every saint a safe place to pray, every kid a safe space to play, every good god a green grave, every falling star a trace, except sad men on a happy day, because depression, with every demon, will every demon need a mind to invade, and there is a name I can't bring myself to say, because they went to see the Undertaker. Man, love sucks, but grief is the real heartbreaker, because there is a dawn every morning, but never again will one wake them. So yeah, this isn't poetry. This is war against the divine enemy. Like Nate said, this is therapy. This is my withstanding of atrophy, my plead for a more humane humanity where freedom isn't a commodity. And happiness is not a luxury, but maybe, just maybe, that's just me dreaming of something to believe in, something to die for, if I'm lucky to mean something in the 21st century. End poem. I'm thinking, was that something for another contest, or?
No, I think it was for, this contest. If you look at the prompts, a lot of the prompts was something that Afasiana said, so this must have been something he talked about. He does say for an addiction, the addiction prompt. So yeah, that I'm not 100% sure.
For part three, so prompt 7 and prompt 6, so paragraph 2 and section 2 and section 4 are for two prompts that happen in this contest. And then other things based on what I said. There's a lot in there, but the ones, so he wrote for prompts 6 and prompt 7. I'm going to go to the contest and look at which ones those were, because some of them were a little bit abstract. So prompt 6 is, if you stumble, make it part of the dance.
Mm-hmm.
And prompt 7 is, be patient, my brain just went down 100 rabbit holes in a second.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I saw those parts that were, okay, that was the epileptic part, but then a lot of other stuff seemed to be for something else. And so I was getting a little, I read the link, but I was wondering if I got a wrong link, or if there was just, like you said, like there's parts that were for one prompt and parts that were for another. So, okay.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. And I kept, as usual with Ben's poem, I said, well, I'm going to comment on this, and he just kind of kept going and going and finding new things. So I'm probably going to comment on the end, but, I thought down in the fourth round, but I like how he did round one. So it almost, I don't know if he did this on purpose, but he's almost talking like round one, like it's a fight, right? Like he's fighting, and he is kind of almost talking possibly about addiction, but I'm almost thinking about mental illness that he's talking about fighting. So the rounds is like fighting. And then down in round four, where he's defying destiny, is interesting. But I also like the bonus round, because to me that almost sounds like not a fight, but like a game that he's playing. So I thought that was just kind of interesting if he did that on purpose. I liked how he did that. And I'm just going to comment on the end. I know we have a lot to comment on here. Where was it here? Oh, yeah. So, yeah, this isn't poetry. It's a war against a divine enemy. I really like that line. I know it's the very end, but he kept saying things or writing things that were interesting. But that one actually got me the most, because I really think that a lot of times that is interesting. It's not just poetry when we write. I don't know if anybody else feels like this. It's almost like trying to fight insanity. you know, it's getting the ideas out. I mean, I've been writing poetry for 30 years, and I didn't realize I was doing it. It was me, like, literally walking around and just thinking things in my head, because that's how I write right now. I write down my thoughts. I write them just in poetic, in kind of a poetic form. And I've always been doing that. And now getting them out is like therapy. I never thought that, you know, I've always used other things to get frustration out or to get depression, whatever, and I've never thought that poetry could do that. But it's happened to me where I'm really frustrated, I'm really upset, or I'm nervous or whatever, and I take a walk and I think and write, and I feel better afterwards. So that's how I got it with that ending part. But anyway, really very interesting, Ben, and he always takes a lot of prompts and puts them together, which is amazing style. But Faziana, I knew you were thinking of some things on here, since it looks like it was a lot of things that you said that actually prompted a lot of these things. I don't know if you know what you said that prompted them.
I do recognize some things in here, yes. I like the dream of teeth shattering. I do dream a lot, not as much as I used to, but of my teeth falling out. I often dream about my teeth, like, shattering into a whole bunch of pieces or falling out. And I think it's because when I'm sleeping, I grind my teeth. And if I have a seizure, I tend to, like, mash my teeth together in a way that really hurts later. So connecting the teeth thing is definitely, I think, a reference to something that I would have said. And I do agree with you, Dan, that it's like a fight. It's like boxing with your illness or with your mental illness or with yourself, having this battle. I thought of it like a fight match as well. Where is it now? 1 second. Sorry, I have a cough. I was highlighting things as I was going because I wanted to talk about them, but I was, like, not in a new thing. I was just highlighting it with my mouse as I was reading it, and then, of course, I found a new thing, and then I highlighted that and then lost my spots. I remember touch and how it returned numb to its senses. Now, that part sounds to me like when I first started doing craniosacral therapy, and it was like when the therapist touched me, it was like, oh my God, I have feelings again. I remember skin. And I feel like that was a reference to when I was talking about that. Because like the scavengers, he was only tracing traces of himself. I like that. Where is it? Sorry, it's so long, it's hard to find my places. In the bonus round, where it says she likes Ren better, it's because I'm, like, obsessed with the poet / singer / rapper Ren, who is on YouTube and Spotify and a bunch of things. You gotta check out Ren. He is my absolute favorite, and I think at one point on one of the shows, I said the only person I like better at this kind of writing than Ben is Ren. So he's like, she likes Ren better. A bunch of this section sounds like Ren's most recent song that was about how money corrupts everything. So he's talking about, like, the poor business person and how all of that kind of represents. The stuff in society represents what's going on in a person, and the stuff in the person represents what's going on in society. And there's kind of like these microcosms and macrocosms that go back and forth with how we deal with money and how we deal with things within ourselves. To me, this section looks like he was listening to Ren's music and figuring out what parts I would connect with. So it's kind of a personal message to me, I think. I think Ben's brilliant, but it's hard to comment on because I need to take notes while we're reading it. It's because it's so long, I forget what I was going to comment on. But it kind of looks at, like, kind of the whole person, and they went you know, just because you have issues with epilepsy, which do have a big impact, there's other stuff going on. So it's like woven in. It's in the beginning, and then it leads to things like that section that was about addiction, and then it's going through it again, and then something else. It's woven into your life, and the way that he put the prompts together, that's kind of how I think about it, is how it becomes part of your bigger picture.
Interesting, very interesting. Pam, what's going on?
Yeah. As always, I think Ben has brilliant imagery and metaphors. He definitely has this way of going off on all kinds of different little areas, and I like how he grabs his inspiration from different places. I really liked that beginning with, "I dream of my teeth shattering, bedroom doors clattering, and another lover fading into streetlights bleak because I kicked them from these sheets without warning." And I could see that being the whole idea of what am I going to do when I'm, you know, in the middle of a seizure. The possible loss of control over the body. And I like that he gave a nod to Faizy, and that he shows that he pays attention to the things that she says, and I think that's wonderful. Bonus round, Faizy's in a fugue state. She likes Ren better. That was great. And also, but we've got everything we need. Every leper has a remedy. Every poet has a freedom to speak. Every woman has a freedom to leave, but not the freedom to leave a legacy, it seems, because immortality is supposed to remain a man's victory. Powerful, hard-hitting lines. On the idea of, you know, lines drawn and how we search for a sense of freedom, but at times it can feel very limited. So excellent, right, and very well done.
Excellent, Pam. Robbie, you got to read it. Did you get some breaths in after that epic you had to read there? You were ready to talk again?
Yeah, I'm ready to box again. I like when somebody uses a format like that in a poem, like a boxing match, because it breaks the poem up in a creative way, and at the same time it breaks up like the sections into the distinct sections of the ideas that are trying to be conveyed. And it was kind of cool to me that it was in terms of a boxing match, and as was commented before, you know, kind of like that mental illness is like a boxing match, and it was almost surreal, the matchup or the lineup. I guess you could say almost a synchronicity that happened there, because a few hours ago, for an entire different reason, I was looking up a clip to send to somebody, and it's Chakotay there in Star Trek Voyager, and they purposely activate his gene that he has, a dormant gene he has that causes mental illness, and they do it so that he can communicate with these aliens that are just like completely an utter alien, and like he's going half, almost going crazy, like trying to in that process. And the thing is that in that process, he latches onto a boxing match to try to make sense of it all, because that was the freshest thing in his memory. So that part of it was just like, oh wow, like just what an amazing side by side. I don't know what you would call it, a comparison, synchronicity, coincidence, whatever. In terms of like just all the ideas being conveyed, it is one of those ones because it is a longer poem and there's all those different sections. I'd really have to read it again slower to unpack it all and see everything that's going on. And like you said, I like that he had a bonus round, you know, and, you know, for a Faziana there. And that's such a cool way to do that. And like, oh, yes, and I'm going to include this person in the poem. Well, how am I going to do it? Bonus round. And so, yeah, that was a very cool and creative way to sneak in like a surprise stanza there, or a surprise section for the poem.
Cool. Thank you very much. All right. What do you want to do now there, Captain?
I would like you to read yours, please.
Mine, okay. Find it here. Yeah, so just to introduce, you know, I, like I said, I don't really have the illness, so I was trying to write. The first part is actually based on something Pam said in the last show, and the second part is more just kind of talking about the brain being crazy itself. So it's called Splorts Splurket. Sometimes I feel like a pigeon, an experiment labeled life, pigeonholed into an identity of parts of me I don't want to be. I am not defects, I am not illness, but unfortunately, I also am. And sometimes I just feel impigeoned in this body. Impigeoned. I-M-P-R-I-S-O-N-E-D. Impigeoned. Oh, the hell, why can't I say this fucking word? What is the fabric from cloth of which I am? Feel some days I am woven by a mad scientist seamstress. But I like my brain. I mean, I built it, at least the memories that make up the database, that make up the thoughts and dreams, that power the emotions and ideas that formulate my understanding. So why is it so angry at me? Why does it sometimes rebel? An insurrection at night where the insurrectionists are just trying to cause chaos and make a point. I know some of the memories I put in are shameful, not fun. Come on, brain, give me a break. You don't have to get so mad at me. I mean, we live together. I'm a circuit board in the power grid of electrical humanity. It's just, I know there are other places in the world to live, and I wish I knew how to move out of Florida. I mean, it's warm and the beaches are nice, but living within Lightning Alley sometimes really isn't fun. End poem.
That was excellent, Dan. Thank you. I like how you're trying to say imprisoned. I mean, like how your narrator is, and then keep saying impigeoned. And then when you spell it out, we see it. But the way that you handled that with the spelling it out with the one letter on each line and making that connection, I thought that was really well done. And like in the beginning, when you're trying to say like you're not defined by your defects and your illnesses, but you are at the same time, like you can't help but have that be a part of your identity. And obviously when I say you, I don't mean like you specifically. I mean like people in general. I really liked how you talk about the brain being something that you build with your memories, and you make up the database and you fill up those thoughts and dreams and they power your emotions and ideas. I really like that whole stanza and the concepts of how the brain is kind of a cyclical thing. You put something in and it comes out, and it's you're contributing to the piece of you that's giving you some some not ideal output, and being angry that it seems to be angry at you. I like that. I'm angry at my brain all the time, which is funny because your brain is you. Really having that debate when I was going through my brain surgery stuff of like, what is the essence of a person? Is my brain who I am? And if my brain changes and that changes my personality, am I still me? There's like this question of it. And in here, the way that you're kind of figuring out, like, I made the brain made me. What is the brain? What is the mind? It just brings me back to that kind of debate of if my mind and my heart and my body are all in disagreement, like which one is me? How are they all me? So you get me thinking about that. And then the kind of the conversational tone of, come on, brain, give me a break. This makes us very relatable. And then the circuit board, the grid of electrical humanity. I like that. And wanting to know, like, what it's like to live somewhere else. And I like that because it's how I wonder what it's like to be someone else, wonder what it's like to be in a different body, and how that would influence things. There's this book, The Host, which is actually by the same person who did Twilight, but I liked it quite a bit better than Twilight. And it's kind of aliens who possess bodies, and the alien seems to be one way when she's in this one body, and then she changes to a different body, and she changes so much, and she's like, why is this different? And it's because, like, different bodies give you different experiences. She had, like, the happy hormones she didn't have in the other one. It's like, if the brain chemistry is different, possessing it, you're different. This just makes me think about that and how your brain influences things. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. Excellent comment. I'll have to read that. I have not heard of that book. I know the author, so I'll have to read that one. Cool. Pam, how about you?
Oh, I already commented.
Oh, you did? Okay, I'm sorry.
Did you? On Dan?
Oh, I'm sorry. Have we moved on to another poem? I did step away, I admit, and I did not see another poem was posted. I apologize.
Okay. Yeah, Faizy, I don't know if you know, but you haven't been posting the poems at all.
What?
The only poem that I see on the board is the first one, unless I'm missing it.
It shows up on mine.
Oh, you know what? It shows up on mine. Oh, that's all me. Forget it. I
apologize, Dan, but can I read your poem and leave you a written comment?
Yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. At all. All right, so Robbie, no worries. Robbie, go for it.
In this, it made me think of how, aside from, like, when you get the fugue states of the auras and that it says here, impigioned, imprisoned. And that's the thing that it can happen where it's not like you're saying words wrong or something, but, like, sometimes you do start, like, almost saying gibberish. Like, there's one time where I felt myself starting to dissociate while I was posting something on a poem. That's from 20 years ago. And I looked at my post and I was like, this is crap. This is gibberish. What the hell is this? And it was, like, so nonsensical and everything, I actually erased it. And I just, like, what the hell was that? I don't even know what I was trying to say. So that kind of, it can happen where your brain, like, if you're doing something, if you're caught up in the process of doing something and you don't stop yourself, your brain can really scramble on what you're doing. And it's funny that you used a pigeon because I have two videos of pigeons acting absolutely crazy. I'll have to see if I can share them with you sometime. But one of them, he's, like, on a pole. And he's just like, I don't know why he was on it because there's no space for him. And he just kept spinning around and around and around in a circle. And there's another one where, like, they don't have, there's something different about their eyes I learned. I learned this because of the video I was posting and saying, what's going on here? And they have to move around their heads constantly for depth perception. And this pigeon was just like, this is the funniest looking thing, but he was looking like, he was looking at like he was having a seizure because he just kept moving his head around a little like crazy. So that part reminded me of that. but yeah, also an insurrection at night. Oh boy, like that one really hit hard at home because I've had these bizarre episodes where I am like at nighttime and I'll be like, I know this is my apartment, but part of me wants to get out of here because some small part of me thinks this isn't my apartment. And I literally have to force myself to stay in my apartment. That's only happened once or twice. And I'm guessing that's a particularly heavy, fugue state or something. And it's just bizarre. And it's that kind of a thing is scary because you're, again, it's like, why can't you work brain? It really reminded me of that part that's the kind of feeling you have. You're like, you do feel an anger even though you're confused because part of you knows that what you're supposed to be thinking and what you're supposed to be realizing and what the truth of the situation actually is. Like, you know, I know this is my apartment, but, and, you know, that part of you is angry. But then some part of you that makes the part that makes you say, you stupid brain, what are you doing? It's saying, no, this isn't my apartment. I'm supposed to get out of here. I'm invading someone else's apartment. So, and I like the ending where it says, it's warm and the beaches are nice, but living with lightning, sometimes really isn't fun. Within Lightning Alley sometimes isn't fun, and it just kind of reminds me of kind of that sentiment of where it's like, well, you know, I basically like my brain. I just wish there weren't little electrical storms going on in it sometimes. So that, I don't know if that was kind of an allusion to that sort of a thing, but that's how I contextualize it for myself. The just not wanting to, you know, basically like in my own self and my own brain, just wishing those electrical storms wouldn't erupt from time to time.
Thanks, Robbie. Yeah, that's what I was kind of going for. What Fazy was saying was, you know, trying to think of somewhere else, right? So a circuit board in the power grid of electrical humanity, where you're just you're kind of part of this just electric craziness that we are. And you know, is there another, you know, if you do have some sort of an issue, can you go somewhere else? And I was trying to describe, you know, brain issues as being, you know, if you're living in the United States, you know, living in Lightning Alley, I don't know why people live there. It's a section of Florida called Lightning Alley. It just has a lot of lightning, some of the most in the United States. I think it might even be some of the most in the world. So, you know, there's other places to live. And, you know, I was trying to do that analogy, so awesome. All right, thanks, guys. What do you want to do now, Fazy?
I think Pam would be good for reading Seeking Freedom, if you're back, Pam.
I am, yes. Yes. Seeking Freedom by Garanwi. Found in pursuit of me playing air guitar on string sounds of lines, caught in a web of silence, talking to myself, seeing ghosts' reflections. My room turns upside down while its ceiling is spinning round. As a roulette wheel of numbers, my bets on zero, where's yours? Seeking to explain, my brain plays a hide and seek with number 10. Sometimes my clocks run backwards, hands melting into dolly time, becoming the hanging Christ, feeling bloody nails hammered into pain, watching flashing colors, rainbows with no gold hidden at their end, finding in my dreaming nightmares some truth of what I am, hanging by my fingertips for hope in tomorrow's beating drum, opening blank spaces to sing songs of being, walking into freedom, reaching horizons of memories on roads unchained from me, walking all pathways, saying hello to life, lines of self-esteem, meeting blue devils and scribbles on a page of mirror writings, shouting out aloud, seeking freedom from the noise, woken perspectives from oblivion's surreal second sleep, shaken by moon tears rolling from my eyes down my cheeks, breathing even rhythms made of music, drawing light and air, catching dawn choruses as heralds, chanting Sanctus Kyrie, forming a choir's oratorio conducting a brand new day and poem.
Excellent, Pam. Thanks so much. That was great. Seeking Freedom, really interesting, and I like the musical tones on this for with seeking freedom. I've often thought of the mind as harmony and disharmony, as music and dissonation, and I can really be thinking, if you just, when I think of harmony, you know, like, you know, instruments together or plucking chords, but then if you've ever heard, you know, disharmony, like guitar strings that are out of tune or just instruments that aren't there, it is literally the vibrations of the instruments in the air hitting each other that makes this kind of tone that can make you cringe. So I like that metaphor throughout the whole thing. And then I'll just do a quick comment. But sometimes my clock runs backwards, hands melting into Dolly time. That's one of those lines I always – there's always usually some lines that I wish – damn, I wish I wrote that one. That's one of those lines that I wish I wrote. It's that good. It's just such an amazing line. Hands, you know, backwards running, melting into Dolly time. You can just feel everything just – it's going backwards. It's melting. It just doesn't make sense. I thought that was a really interesting line. And then, you know, back into – music again, opening blank spaces to sing songs of being walking into freedom, reaching horizons of memories on roads unchained for me. So, you know, freedom from your own mind, or freedom from your own issues is, you know, how, like, you know, Faizy was saying earlier, you know, what am I? You know, am I my thoughts? Am I my person? There's a, I've been thinking about that for a while. I think it might have been a contest that Afaziana had that got me thinking about it, where, you know, we were talking about prisoners of your thoughts. I can't remember, something about thoughts, and I was thinking, like, what are my thoughts? Because I don't really necessarily, I can control my thoughts. I can sit there, you know, just like I control my breathing, right? Like, if I don't think about breathing, I still breathe, luckily, but it's one of those senses or those controls that is both automatic and control. I can breathe if I want. I can control my breathing, but I can also, it also happens. It's the same thing with thoughts, right? So I can control, I can think about things, but a lot of times I can't. A lot of times thoughts just come in my head. So where are they coming from? If I'm not controlling them, where is that coming from? So am I my own thoughts? And trying to, you know, free yourself, from that, so you know, free yourself from your own actual issues. You know, there was a movie that was interesting too. It was called, I can't remember the name of it. I wish I could. It had a really interesting name. It was Robin Williams. His wife, Robin Williams died, and then his wife committed suicide. But he was in heaven, which was like a painting. And then he had to go into hell. I can't remember the name. It had a right at the tip of my tongue. Anyway, he had to go into hell to get her, because she, like, committed suicide. And there was an angel which was there with him and asking him, like, that he, you know, he lost his hand or something. And he said, well, is that your hand? If you lost your hand, would you still be you? And I agree with that statement, but I also don't. Like, you know, I'm a drummer. So if I lost my hand, that would be a huge part of me that would go away. If I couldn't express myself in what way, that's a big part of me. So I both agree with the fact that we're not necessarily our one parts. If we lose parts of us, even our mind, is it still us? But also we are that as well. So, sorry, going off on tangents, but that's what all this made me think of. So, yeah, great, great poem. Faizy, go to you.
I think tangents are good for tonight because it, you know, it's your brain misfiring is kind of our theme, and that tangents are a thing that happens naturally, especially if your brain misfires. I also really liked the line, sometimes my clocks run backwards, hands melting into Dolly time. I love the clock image by Dolly. I used to have it as a poster for many years, and moving kind of ruined it, but I love that clock image by Dolly, and to do to think about your time being in that way, where it's hard to keep track of time, and it seems like you're lost within it, and time kind of melts away. I feel that when you're in, especially like the after seizure time, where it's just like I have no sense of time, and it's like I'm in another like year. But something about the meltiness of it really suits the brain waves of seizures. And then finding in dreaming nightmares some truth of what I am. And I do think you see yourself in your dreams. You figure out who you are, who your subconscious builds your dreams. So you see parts of yourself that you usually hide. The things that you repress come out in your nightmares. So I really like that line as well. Where is it? Meeting blue devils in scribbles on a page. Again, blue comes up. Blue is connected to all of these things in me. And then scribbles on a page of mirror writings. And I like mirror writings because our writing kind of does mirror ourselves. We're reflected in our writing. Whether we're trying to write truth and autobiography or not, some of us comes out in our writing. They also think about like writing on mirrors, and like usually people write like affirmations or things like that. Like, so when you look at the mirror and you see yourself, you're reminded to, you know, focus on the good things instead of the bad, or I don't know. I've seen people do that. I don't actually do that. I'm picturing like also in horror movies when people write in lipstick on the mirror, and it's like a message. But there's this kind of eeriness of the mirror writing, and I feel like our poetry often mirrors ourselves. Where is it? Surreal second sleep. I like that. The kind of in between sleep and consciousness, there's that kind of surreal limbo where nothing's quite real, but it is real. You know, when Robbie was talking about being in his apartment but not being in his apartment, I think that suits that line. This was an interesting one.
It absolutely was. Thanks, Faizy. Pam, let's go to you.
Yeah, I really like what Faizy had to say in her observations. This, to me, was absolutely, as far as describing the chaos of going into the seizure and coming out of the seizure, one of my favorites. It was brilliant in its presentation of the imagery and metaphors, especially sometimes my clocks run backwards, hands melting into dolly time, becoming the hanging Christ, feeling bloody nails hammered into pain. And that to me perfectly describes the kind of pain that I feel I would feel when I would come out of a seizure, especially the headaches. The mirror writing, you know, it's interesting because we always relate certain parts of poems to what we know in our own lives. And my eldest has a condition that's called mirror hand syndrome. He has a milder form of it. Like some people actually have it through their whole body, but basically what happens is whatever the one hand is doing, the other hand mimics. So, like, for example, you know, and it's thankfully he never wanted to be, a secretary or anything, but, like, he has to type one-handed because if he puts both hands on the keyboard, one hand starts typing, the other one starts typing too. And so I immediately connected with that and the idea of, you know, not being able to control your body in the way. But I also like what Fazy had to say about how our writing is a mere reflection of ourselves. I mean, all the way through this had some great lines. And I too liked where it said, woken perspectives from oblivion, surreal second sleep, shaken by moon tears rolling from my eyes down my cheeks. I really feel like a lot of times that confusion that happens when you are coming out of a seizure is so absolutely terrifying. And it is, in its own way, very surreal. So I think connecting this with the surrealism of Dolly just worked well, and it was very well done.
Cool. Thanks, Pam. And Robbie, who do you?
Well, with the Dolly clock, I found it very apt because it's surrealism. So like you have like cubist stuff in that. It's just not reality at all, completely removed. And it's like you were saying, you know, Faziano was saying about the apartment. With the dissociating and everything, you are in reality. It's not like you're literally in another dimension. Physically you're in reality, but mentally you're in a different space. So that's kind of like a surrealism to me, because, you know, you're in reality, but you're not. And so I found that the Dolly clock was a perfect reflection of that. And this kind of felt prayer-like to me almost. And it's almost like a prayer of, well, I'm hoping that my self gets better. And we've been talking about like the identity of the self and everything. And I've been thinking about that actually a lot on myself these past couple of days. And it can be really hard to pin down at any given moment what you feel is you. And I'm thinking that at some point, sometimes you might feel more so that something is a part of you than at other times. And especially the last part here where it's catching dawn choruses as heralds chanting Sanctus Kyrios, forming a choir's oratorio, conducting a brand new day. That's the most impassioned part. It gets going from like the most emotional, shaken by moon tears, to the most hopeful, you know, hoping for a brand new day. And it's just like conducting a brand new day. So to me, it sounds like it's, you know, you're trying to do that. Yeah, it's like you're forming a choir's oratorio. So it's like in your mind, your mind's voice is trying to form the new day itself. So that's kind of like the most hopeful part for me there.
No, I get that. And, I've looked at the brain and what I think is that there's this thing called the corpus callosum, which is in the brain, which is this part. It's almost like a spider web. It made me think when Fazy was saying that, it almost looks like a weird looking spider. And it basically connects the different parts of the brain. I think it's the closest thing to consciousness that we could actually see in a physical thing. Because basically without it, we wouldn't be able to connect things. Not even vision. It's not like it connects, like it lets you do vision and sound at the same time and lets those things, interpret together, because it does. But it's like, it's not just vision, it's depth perception, it's different colors at the same time, it's shapes, it's all of those things. Without the corpus callosum, you literally wouldn't be able to see anything. You would either just see one color or a shape it puts everything together. It's the only way that our brain works together. So that's the thing that I think is, if I was going to pick something that is actual consciousness, it's that. Because imagine if you couldn't do those things, you couldn't feel or interpret anything. But anyway, that's yeah, it is an interesting kind of find what is you. You know, it's a very, very interesting philosophical discussion. But we are a poetry show, not a philosophy show, so I think we've got to move on and do some more poetry.
Okay, our next poem is A Warrior's Fight by Jody Melton. It's my turn to read, but I'm not doing great with talking, so Robbie, would you read that one for me, please?
Okie dokie. Warriors Fight. Beneath the lavender skies embraced, I've seen the storms that cross your face. Epilepsy, a tempest wild and blind, leaves a different strength behind. In your eyes, the world's reframed with deeper hues than ever named. As seizures shroud the pain it brings, yet in your heart, resilience sings. You've known the grasp of unseen chains, felt normalcy slip through like grain. Yet each tremor that shakes your core, carves your spirit, reveals much more. More understanding in your touch, your empathy becomes a crutch. For those who fall, you're the first to stand with a soothing word, a helping hand. You hurt, my sister, more than most, yet kindness blooms a constant host. Your laughter's a balm, your tears a sea, both more profound than they used to be. Appreciation comes swift and true, for moments calm in skies of blue. You see the world in a vivid scope. Each day you dare, each night you hope. I've seen you at your best when the attacks would come again. You've always got back up, dusted off, and refused to let them win. Hopes like phoenixes from ashes rise. You always face your challenges with a defiant spark deep in your eyes. Oh, love, you give so free, a boundless, fierce infinity. Your open life's a dance, a song, a testament of being strong, living with passion, with courage so rare, in every breath a whispered prayer. For life is precious. This much you know, with every high comes a new low. So here's to you and your warrior's fight, to the peace after every fraught night. May you find strength in the stars, with each battle, one after another. And know what, whenever you're in need, look no further than your brother. End poem.
Excellent read. That was a great read, Robbie. And it says, to my sis, without your love and guidance, I don't know where I'd be, your biggest fan. And, yeah, this is such a poem of strength. And I like that I think we've seen a couple of them, or at least one of the poem about that type, about strength with this, and talking about the sister who has the epileptic seizures, but it's her strength that gets that. And it's some just beautiful. I mean, the rhyming was amazing in this. I think it's lyrical, like this is almost like a song the way it reads, because it's so well done. The stanzas and the lines just flow together so beautifully. So amazing job with that. And what it brought to mind was it's just strength, you know. And it is, and you guys all have it, you know. All three of you have the strength with your epilepsy and phase with all the stuff you've been through. It's not putting you. You're not cowering in the corner. You go out and do things. You know. I see all the time. You tell me about going to Renaissance fairs and all the different stuff that you do. You're not letting it get you down, and that is a huge, admiration and something for inspiration. It reminds me. This is off topic a little bit. What reminded me of the other day. You know. The other day I was taking a walk, and I was walking around, and I saw this homeless woman, and she was either Chinese or Mongolian or something. She was obviously foreign, and couldn't speak English, and she was homeless, and she was in tattered clothes, and she had a shopping cart with a bunch of stuff on it, and she was eating. I don't know where she got the food, but she was eating like a Entenmann's box. And so I walked by, and I just said hi and smiled at her, and I said I should try to help her out. I didn't have any cash on me, so I walked home, and I got some cash, and I came back, and she wouldn't take it. And at first I thought, you know, maybe she thinks I want something from her. So I just put the cash next to her. I said, and I just kind of, you guys can't see me, but I just, you know, just said, I don't, you know, yours. And I started walking away. She said, no. She wouldn't take it. And I could tell, even though she couldn't speak English, it wasn't an insult. It wasn't anything. She was just, no, I can't take your money. I you know, she felt like, she felt bad. It wasn't a pride thing. It was a, you know, I can't take money from you. I'll take care of myself. I don't want to inconvenience you. And that was such a strength thing that I saw for her. And I think of these, you know, these people on the other end who have so much money, so much stuff, and all they want is more. And that's such a weakness, you know. And then you see these other people who don't and are so strong. You know, I was trying to imagine this woman. You know, she must have been, I'm sure she somehow was by herself. I don't know how she got here. From the other side of the world, can't speak the language, doesn't have any money, is completely homeless. I would be, if I was like in Mongolia, completely homeless, like with not being able to speak a language, I'd be petrified. You know, I'd be begging for money. I'd be like knocking on people's doors, please help me. You know, and she's just being strong and taking care of herself and doesn't want to inconvenience anyone else, just happy to be alive. And that was such a strength. I know this is way off topic, guys, but that's just kind of what it reminded me of is people who are, you know, strength can be an athlete and somebody who's, you know, strong, but strength is also, you know, people who are not and who kind of keep going. And I thought that was a great poem of that. Anyway, sorry, I'm rambling on here. Faizy, you up for talking still? You want to comment real quick?
She said, be right back. Skip me for comments.
Okay, so we'll go to you, Pam.
All right. Well, this one really touched my heart. And I love this poem because it's one of those that sparks conversation. Like when he wrote this dedication to his sister, and this is a beautifully written poem. Of course, I shared with him about how me and my sister both have epilepsy. And then, you know, in private message, we talked a little bit about, you know, and I also mentioned my son does. And, you know, it just, you don't think of yourself as strong, but when you see somebody else going through it, you see their own strength. And, you know, I can just feel the love that he has for his sister and the admiration that he has for her. And, you know, I'm really glad that he was inspired to write this. And I particularly like, you hurt my sister more than most. Your kindness blooms a constant host. Your laughter's a balm. Your tears a sea, both more profound than that they used to be. Appreciation comes swift and true for moments calm and skies of blue. You see the world in vivid scope. Each day you dare, each night you hope. And I think when somebody does have epilepsy and they don't have their seizures under control, you just have that, you know, all you can do is hope that it will be a better day than the day before. But yeah, this one really is truly just an amazing rite, honoring the heart of his sister and her strength. So very well done.
Yeah, I think you hit it right there, Pam, with hope. You know, when you have these things, it's you always have hope until you don't. You know, that's the one thing I think is that there's always hope. And there really is, you know. And the hope that, you know, whatever you guys go through with epilepsy or anything, it's that, all right, that maybe that was the worst one I'll ever have in my life. You know, have I gone through the worst one? You know, so the hope is that somehow it'll calm down. I'm trying to think of another example. But anyway, you know, those things can happen. People can come out of things. Like I used to be, I don't want to curse myself here by having panic attacks, but I used to have really bad panic attacks. I used to just, to the point where I couldn't even, like eat. But, like, seriously, like, I couldn't actually swallow. I'd have to eat these tiny little bites because I would, like, choke on them. And I couldn't go anywhere outside of where I was. I was just, like, petrified of life. And I got over it. You know, I still get anxious and all that, but it got better, and I kind of just got over it, and it went away. And so, you know, obviously epilepsy, it's not just going to go away, but is that hope of tomorrow's going to be a good day, And, you know, maybe I won't, you know, I've had the worst I've ever had, right? So hope is interesting with that. So, Robbie, go for it, man.
That captured my attention when Pam was saying about, well, you know, you just go on, right? And, or you don't, like, you just don't think of it as going on. You just, or being strong, you just do what you do. And I think, again, it's one of those things of you're just so habituated to this situation in your life that you just do the things that you want and need to do because there isn't really any other choice, right? You're just going to go out there and do what you want to do despite what's happening. You don't want to become a hermit because of it. And but I think you forget how other people see you forget that they do see that as strong. And I've actually had, like, two or three people, like, kind of remind me of that or say, like, you know, I wish you, kind of this sentiment of, like, I wish you could see yourself from my perspective, you know, and like, what you've actually accomplished in that. And, you know, I get that sentiment that, like, you know, well, this and that's happening, Robert, but you still just go out there and you do what you do, eh? And so there's always that, it helps when somebody reminds you of that because you're not seeing it yourself because, well, you're you, right? You're just, you're in your own space, your own headspace in that, and you're just living your own life. And in terms of just the tone of this poem, it's nice to see a poem that is tender in that, like all these poems that we've been reading and commenting on, a lot, most of them have been about, you know, the negative effects that epilepsy has in that. But it's nice to find a poem here that celebrates the strength and that it shows the connection between you know, brother and sister here. And one thing that really captured me was, may you find strength in the stars, because I keep saying to myself, I keep having to be my own star. And I guess that's that kind of that strength thing where it's like you have to shine for yourself, right? Like no one's going to do it for you. And so it kind of reminded me of that sentiment. And it kind of makes me actually, because I keep meaning to write on that, and I want to write on that. But that's, yeah, especially from that line on, it's a very beautiful, tender ending. May you find strength in the stars, win each battle, one after another, and know that wherever you're in need, look no further than your brother. That's such a beautiful sentiment there.
Are you on mute, Dan?
I was very elegant in everything, the way I talk, so I'll never be able to repeat that. But I was just saying, great way to end, except for me talking on mute, with a great comments, and great way to end. That actually is perfect timing because we only have a couple minutes left, and we've ended all of our epileptic poems. So, Fazy, I don't know if you're there and you want to comment, but I just want to say it was really an amazing journey, and Robbie, thanks for going along with, and Pam for going along with that with Fazy and I on this two-show epic journey exploring epilepsy and the details and what people experience are with that. And what we have left is, there was another contest that Faziana had that we'll get to those the next show in 2 weeks. But Faziana, are you there, or you want me to, or I'll count to 10, and if not, I'll close it out unless you're there.
I'm here, but I can't really talk. So there's 20 seconds left. Thank you.
All right. So thanks, Fazy. I know this is tough for you. And thanks everybody for everybody that listened and all the amazing poetry. Like I said, we'll get to the next contest that was posted on here next time. So everybody have a fantastic evening, and we'll see you all in a couple of weeks.